we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a job advertisement from the Stour and Avon magazine, read by Neil Sleet.
Birth controller, part-time. Must be prepared to work in all weathers. Must have full driving licence and shotgun certificate.
Now, thanks to everyone who sent us that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sarah Pascoe. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Ellis James. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, whose speech was in the bag?
The Queen's speech. It was so boring that she knocked a kid out. And you just, you know, some poor little Viscount on work experience. Little tyke there, just lost the will to live after about 8 minutes. And I say poor, he's the heir to a huge estate in Scotland. You'd think they'd give the opportunity to, like, you know, like at Wimbledon, they have orphan chimney sweeps chucking the balls at. And it was rubbish. She's very bad live, actually, the Queen. You know, she's just, I don't know, I mean, maybe she's done too much telly, but she's just lost the edge. You think, I know she hasn't written this, but it's a bit offensive to somebody who has. You know, somebody's written this. Someone must have spent a good 15 or 20 minutes putting that together. And she was phoning it in. She didn't even look up once. And I just think, look, if you're not interested in this, write your own speech. You know, do your own material. My government will kill time until the election. Individual ministers positioning themselves for a range of scenarios in the interests of their own careers. That is all.
Did you like it, Hugo? Do you think it was a good speech?
You can't not like a lady in a crown sitting on a gold throne talking about plastic bags. I mean, that's just fantastic, isn't it? It's Britain all over. I'm very confused. The whole plastic bag thing, it sort of struck a weird chord in me because I've definitely written a column about banning plastic bags, but I've no idea what I thought. And it's exactly that sort of topic where, you know, certainly as a journalist, you definitely have a strong view on. But I've no idea what it was. I mean, I'll just toss a coin and do it again, I guess.
Do you think that ministers thought it would be funny to hear the Queen just say plastic carrier bag? Do you think
if only she'd pulled it off that toddler's head, he wouldn't have fainted in the middle.
Also, when she's talking about a bag for life, you know, with her mother, that's some pretty sturdy bag.
It's a great cultural metaphor, the Queen's speech, isn't it? We make an old lady read a series of policy announcements wearing a very heavy hat as a symbol of our lack of respect for the elderly. I mean, it is an extraordinary thing. Did you enjoy it, Ellis?
We've had that 5p for a plastic bag rule in Wales for years.
Have you?
But I live in London now, so when I drive back, I sort of have hundreds in the boot and I sell them at threepence. I'm absolutely gutted they're bringing it in England.
You're slightly going to be able to recall MPs in a
way.
Yeah,
if your MP kills a man, you can go...
If you think there's shale gas under your MP, I think you can frack underneath him. I did feel for that boy who passed out. He's called Viscount Eighth. Is it A3?
I had the news on in the background, and I just heard 12-year-old Viscount. I was thinking to myself, what the biscuit?
I didn't know that aristocrats had work experience. But I suppose if you need to prepare, you know, for your life of titled luxury, you sort of have to spend a few days hanging out in the House of Lords just to get a feel for it, you know.
Beats doing work experience at prompter print, doesn't it? Like, sort of lost.
I did my work experience at a children's nursery because it was the shortest hours that you could do.
We didn't have work experience, did we, Jeremy? I never did.
No,
remember this.
No, we just had to go plunge straight in with a sense of entitlement.
Record of achievement?
No.
I didn't have those, because that's the work experience was so that you had something to kind of put into your record of achievement that you hadn't written yourself.
Yes, and it looked like a wine list.
Yeah.
Did you have records of achievement, all that kind of thing? I'm trying to work out when it came in.
No, I went to public school. We didn't need to achieve things.
No, that's fine. True.
Obviously, we were only there because of our excellent genes.
Yes, no,
So what's the point in having certificates and things like that?
Spam through the correct gene pool.
Absolutely, yeah.
charges for plastic bags the right to frack under privately owned land without permission, and limited rights to recall MPs were included in the Queen's speech this week, and a page boy fainted. David Cameron said the speech demonstrated a packed programme of a busy and radical government, showing that he doesn't know what between one and five of those words mean. The Queen spoke about the introduction of a Cinderella law, which would make being emotionally cold to children a form of abuse, as she ignored an unconscious child 8 feet away from her. Two points to Jeremy. Sarah, who's taking secrecy for a trial run?
This is about spies and the legal system. So basically, we have a secret service, but we know about it, so it's not very good. And obviously, and these people do work that protects us and the country. And what's happened in the past is that because these people are secret, invisible people doing secret, invisible jobs, when it's come to take the bad guys, the terrorists, to trial, they've said, this guy, he did a really bad thing. How do you know? Can't tell you because it's a secret, that secret guy did it. And so they've had to let the bad guys off, and they've had to pay out millions of pounds in fines. So now what they want to do is do one of these trials in secret, which basically means that the judge will know and everyone in the room will know, but the press won't know and we won't get to know about it. But this is the only way of punishing these terrorists without risking these secret spy people. So I think ideally what we should do is just make the trial open, but then the secret spies should go on Big Brother and everyone will forget about them again. So, because that's what happens now, because Big Brother, it used to be on Channel 4 and it was very popular, like a prison for people who wanted to be more successful. Now it's on Channel 5, it's more like a witness protection programme. Actually, because of the fading nature of memory and the very low viewing figures, less people know who you are when you come out than did when you went in.
But I don't think these people are going to be in a big threat because this is not very good at it. According to The Guardian, the two were found in possession of a document labelled bomb-making.
As a kind of, in theory, and I don't know anything about this case, obviously, none of us do, but if justice is impossible, if a trial is talked about, then because if you're trying to be as just as you can be, it would have to be a secret. So if this is James Bond is real and he is catching criminals, but that can't go to trial or all of the criminals will find out that James Bond is real and the next time that he comes in a wig and moustache, they'll be like, no, that is James Bond. Let's not show him where we keep the bomb-making file.
Yeah, but the security people, they don't have to give their name and stuff. They go and stand behind the screen. It's like confession or something. What's my line? Nobody knows who they are.
I've seen Andy McNab's lips loads of times.
His lips?
Yeah, because when they interview Andy McNab about, you know, the first Gulf War, they'll just film his mouth. They often do the same thing with football hooligans. Do you not watch the same TV I watch?
Are you sure your television is working?
No, I remember one newspaper, and I can't remember which one it was, and I dearly hope it wasn't mine. Andy McNab wrote a column for them, and so they did his kind of byline photo, but they blacked it out. But they sort of screwed it up a bit, and in fact, they published it with just having given him a slight tan.
And there are still going to be 12 members of the public on the jury.
Not all trials have juries.
This one does, though.
Does it have a jury trial?
Okay. Yeah. They need famously silent people, don't they? Sort of sooty... Buster Keaton, pro-European Tories, just people who are famously good at
keeping
storm.
They would get into
storm.
Lots of trouble if they talked about it, the jury. Because do you remember that? This is ages ago, because juries aren't even allowed to talk about what happens in the jury room, how they make their decisions. But after a case, I think this was in the 80s, that they had done a Ouija board to try and speak to the murdered victim.
And also today must be very difficult if you want to keep it all a terrible secret. I mean, there's a constant threat in court that Rolf Harris will pop in and start drawing people. I mean, a terrorism trial could be heard entirely in secret for the first time in an English court due to an order obtained by the CPS on the grounds of national security. The trial remains a closely guarded secret, with it only being reported by every single newspaper in the country. Until recently, it's been forbidden to even report the existence of this trial. As it is, the BBC are going to have to emit a special sound wave after this round to wipe your memories clean of the whole thing. And here it is, with Trouble in Ambridge, The Archers. 2 points to Sarah. Hugo, why might a wooden horse cause a broken cabinet?
This is a complicated and difficult story, but basically it's about this long-running saga about this suspicion that there has been a Trojan horse plot in Birmingham to turn schools Islamist. And it's quite a weird terminology, the idea of a Trojan horse plot in a school, because it sort of suggests that there are school governors with lots of Islamists inside them. They're going to burst out of their bottoms as soon as they take control and run amok. But the reason why this all kind of sort of, you know, hit the news was because Michael Gove was complaining about it, and he was blaming the Home Office for being poor at tackling extremism. But in blaming the Home Office for being poor at tackling extremism, he particularly named a man called Charles Farr, who's some head of anti-terrorism or anti-radicalisation or something. And it turns out that Charles Farr not only works for the Home Office, but is also the boyfriend of a woman called Fiona Cunningham, who is a spin doctor for Theresa May, who's the Home Secretary.
Ah.
So after Michael Gove had complained about the Home Office was very cross and started shouting that it was all the Department of Education's fault, and the Department of Education started shouting that it was all the Home Office's fault, and then David Cameron had to shout at everybody to tell them to stop it. And so you had Michael Gove, who was sort of backpedaling a bit and started to say really, really nice things about Theresa May, obviously in the expectation that Theresa May would say nice things about him, but she didn't, so it was slightly embarrassing. But deep down, really, what this is all about is the way that Michael Gove wants George Osborne to be the next Prime Minister and Theresa May wants Theresa May to be the next Prime Minister. So in a way, the Trojan horse is itself a Trojan horse. And you've got a horse inside a horse with Islamists inside one of the horses and Theresa May or Michael Gove inside another one, depending on who you believe.
I went to a convent for a while, and you do think sometimes extremism is hard to define. Some of those nuns would call the Taliban liberal. Seriously, it was...
I hadn't realised when I went to Australia and New Zealand that they don't have religious education there, as in they don't have an RE GCSE. So actually, any school, if it has a religious denomination, you're only taught that religion. I think what's one of the really wonderful things about our schooling is it doesn't matter what religion you have at home, you do have to sit a GCSE, which is about tolerance and different people's beliefs and the fact that different people, for the same reasons, whether that be compassion or charity, believe different things. And I think that's how you fight. It's not by stopping people, it's by making sure that young people who are very formative learn about the other options as well.
Burn in hell, you evil temptress.
We don't even know that there is a plot. It's a whole argument about something that nobody has yet proved exists. It's a bit like arguing over the Loch Ness Monster.
It's just about... He's trying to run a parallel Home Office within the Department of Education because he says that the trouble with Theresa May is that she is only concerned about actual terrorism rather than bearded men in general.
Working together now, Michael Gove and Theresa May, to investigate. Yes. I have to say, Michael Gove and Theresa May investigating a plot has got to be the worst Enid Blyton book of all time.
The famous two lack charisma.
Are they not working together now?
Apparently so. Well, they keep people in the coalition keep doing this. They keep falling out dramatically and then have to sort of be pictured in a pub sort of miserably clutching pints next to each other. You know, last week it was Nick Clegg and Vince Cable doing that. And
that was fantastic, the pints shot. And they're both sitting there looking like they hated each other. And I was thinking, I suppose as you get older and you get a bit more responsible, I thought, well, that's not very responsible, is it? I mean, they're in the government and they're drinking pints at lunchtime. But then I thought, Clegg must have sat down and thought, no, I won't have a pint. I've got to get back to the office and I've got to... I'll have a pint.
A cabinet split has emerged over the alleged plot by Islamic extremists using a so-called Trojan horse to take over Birmingham schools. Michael Gove and Theresa May have each blamed the other's departments for not dealing with the problem. Mrs. May wrote Mr. Gove a letter saying, "Is it true that the Department for Education was warned in 2010? If so, why did nobody act?" The Secretary of State responded by sticking his fingers in his ears and saying, "La, la, la, I can't hear you." Gove has stressed the need for stricter punishment to be imposed on Islamic extremists in schools. Any perpetrators who are caught will be made to do pee in their pants. 2 points to Hugo. Ellis, who is calling foul and blowing the whistle on corruption?
Oh, this is to do with the... it's a bit of a mess, isn't it? The awarding for the 2022 World Cup to Qatar, which, if you haven't heard of it, it's about the size of my airing cupboards. It's 50 degrees in the summer, homosexuality is illegal, and they're going to have a World Cup there. And apparently, according to the Sunday Times, allegedly Mohammed bin Hamman made secret payments to soccer officials in the run-up, you know, paid lots of bribes. And knowing my luck, playing a World Cup in a country that's 50 degrees in the summer, that'll be the one World Cup Wales qualify for in my lifetime.
and I'll get sunstroke on the walk from the plane to the terminal, and then and when I wake up, we'll have been knocked out of the group stages, and then that's all I'll have to remember it by is some Molten tickets and a sort of pint of hot beer. But I once got sunstroke watching Swansea City play Yeovil. But it's not suitable. It's not a suitable place to hold the World Cup, even if it isn't dodgy. The thing I really like about it is that David Beckham, who was part of the England bid, because they awarded the 2018 World Cup and the 2022 World Cups at the same time. So England made a bid for 2018. And David Beckham in the paper said, "I can cope with being lied to. But the idea of lying to the Prime Minister and the future King of England just makes my blood boil." Which makes him sound like those humble Cockneys you get on The World at War. I don't know if you've seen that documentary.
Oh, you can cope with an awful lot when you're being bombed by the Luftwaffe, actually. But if I thought that they bombed Buckingham Palace, I'd have got the first train to Berlin and I'd have given Adolf Hitler a piece of my mind.
It's the idea that we're sort of supposed to be, like, surprised that there was something slightly dodgy about the decision to give a football tournament to a country without grass in it. And also, I mean, the people who are in charge of sport are up there with the worst people in the world. They're always doing things like this. They don't care where the Olympics goes, where any games goes, where the World Cup goes. You know, there's sort of these terrible old men kind of like dressed like Alan Partridge in charge of just the worst kind of organisations. It's the only sort of body of public life where you actually still get an award for having a personality. Of course they're dreadful.
But even the names make them sound... Sepp Blatter. I mean, does it sound like something which needs an antifungal pessary? I have to say, I know people are up in arms about this. I know you're a football fan, aren't you, Alice? You like football. I have to say, for me, it's the only interesting thing that's ever happened in football. I think it's...
I think I agree with you. I think the whole of football needs... And this needs to be freshened up a bit, and I've got some great ideas. So, for one, when someone gets a free kick, they shouldn't have to use that on the ball.
Oh.
They could use it on any of the other players or the ref. When there's a substitution, I think that should be like online grocery shopping. Like, oh, you asked for Theo Walcott, but we couldn't find him. So we've sent you, retired cricketer, Ian Botham. Oh, it's fun for everyone. And when there's penalties, I feel like the players should actually be penalised and forced to do something they don't want to, like be faithful to their partners. Yeah, we'd all enjoy it.
I think that's a great idea. It's like I've never understood why people who play from Chelsea don't just come from Chelsea. What is the matter? Yeah. Why do they come from all over the place?
If they just came from Chelsea, it would be a load of rugby players on the pitch. I don't understand. Pick up the bloody ball, you fool. What goes on in state education? Pick it up and run with it.
The sad thing is, like, I like you all, but when it comes to football, I'm so humourless. When Sarah started talking, I was like, she's making fun of football. I'm going to get really angry in a minute.
You can't do those things. The rules and regulations are there for a reason, because it's the best sport in the world, and I love it.
So, Ellis, for you, the main problem isn't the bribe itself. It's the fact that there wasn't a second defender between them at the time the bribe was passed.
Exactly, Sandy! Stop making fun of football!
To worry whether something if football is corrupt. I mean, if like jurors were paid, for example, you can't find out who jurors are these days. You wouldn't be able to bribe them. But you know, if governments are given money to like and arms deals and things like that and all of that, but surely in sport,
the obvious simple solution is do it like Eurovision. You know, whoever won last time gets to host it next time. We'd get to go to Brazil a lot.
Yeah.
You're ruling Wales out, even though we've got a really nice stadium in Cardiff.
It's going to cost... look like having an angina.
I know. Oh God, I collect stickers.
I think British football fans are outraged because was it £3 million?
It's got $5 million.
Yeah, but that could have been spent on a time machine to take us back to 1966.
In my case, 1958, because that's the last time Wales qualified for a World Cup, although we did get to the quarterfinals of the 1976 European Championships. Bye!
Ellis, do you have a girlfriend?
Yes, and she is very, very patient.
Qatari officials have been questioned by FIFA investigator Michael Garcia after claims about the legality of the bidding process for the 2022 World Cup. It is alleged that Mohammed bin Hammam, former vice president of FIFA, paid a total of £3 million to officials in return for supporting Qatar's winning bid, which really put Australia's offer of a couple of tinnies and a cork hat in the shade. 2 points to Ellis. So at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Ellis. We start round two with a cutting from the Sunday Telegraph.
An electronic road sign malfunctioned on a motorway in Hampshire. The board by the side of the A326 displayed the message, "Drink and drive." After the word "don't" failed to illuminate.
And our thanks to Richard Stranick for sending us that. Sarah, why aren't food banks getting their fair share?
Oh, this is to do with supermarkets wasting food that could be eaten by people if they gave it away. So the House of Lords this week, they said that supermarkets should stop doing their buy one, get one free offers, which is ironic because we voted for one set of MPs and then we got another lot for free. And by free, I mean millions and millions of pounds. So everyone's blaming each other. So supermarkets are saying this is the consumer's fault. Tesco have been saying this for years. Actually, it's the consumer's fault because the consumers sometimes buy two for one and then don't eat all of the food. And sometimes the consumers don't buy the food and then they have to throw it away. So that's our fault as well. And what could actually happen is that all of that food is edible, and what needs to happen is a system where that is shared out to people or given to schools or home economics teachers or people who can actually use it, and then it wouldn't be creating landfill waste.
Well, couldn't we just eat more, all of us?
Yeah, that would be good.
If only we could get over this thing about obesity and just see it as a positive thing.
Well, none of the cakes are going. Like, they're all getting eaten. Oh, the cakes and biscuits, they're fine. This is mostly about lettuce.
Isn't it like sort of subsidised, so it's actually in their interest to have food left over because they get paid for it by the tonne as biofuel, which is kind of more profitable than throwing it away.
So, yeah, and some of it's turned into fuel and some of it's turned into landfill. Although I suppose technically landfill is just a very, very long-term version of turning it into fuel.
Waitrose have got a new manky range, the slightly manky-looking things that are blemished, discoloured and misshaped. You know, people used to send carrots shaped like genitalia to Esther Ranson until the police caught them. Harassment was a lot more creative in those days. There was no Twitter, you had to grow stuff. But Waitrose have decided to do a thing to say things don't have to be pretty to be edible.
I like the phrase blemished. It's as if they're allowed to sell vegetables that have been involved in a scandal.
Adolescent.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. I think that's it. A lot of this comes down to advertising. If you're telling people, consumers all the time, that what you've got to have has got to be glossy and perfectly packaged and that will mean you'll be a happier person, now they just need to do the opposite, where it's kind of like, yeah, those M&S adverts going, oh, this is not just a chopped up cabbage, it's 2 days out of date. 50p cheaper.
That looks like a penis. Yeah.
Do you not think supermarket waste sounds like a post-apocalyptic game show hosted by Dale Winton?
He's the only person who survived.
Him and four cockroaches. Yeah.
Just glowing a bit more.
Supermarkets are wasting thousands of tonnes of surplus food because, according to a leading charity, government subsidies make it cheaper to turn it into biogas instead of donating it to food banks. Frank Field, an MP leading an inquiry into food poverty, said the subsidy system was madness on stilts, inadvertently ruining plans for the best 80s tribute band ever. 2 points to Sarah. Hugo, have a listen to this.
Once I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
Yeah, palatial palace, that was my home.
Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
And now I vacuum the turf at Sky Dome.
Once he was the king of Spain.
Hugo, whose reign in Spain has ended in pain.
Very nice. This would be the king of Spain,
yeah.
Juan Carlos, which is a name you've got to say very carefully in case you miss out the loss bit. Juan Carlos. He has...
Juan Carr. Yeah.
Do better? Loss. Yeah. Loss.
Yeah.
Juan Carlos.
That didn't really help, did it?
he has announced that he wants to abdicate in favour of his son, whose name isn't funny at all. It's just Philippe. He says he wants to step down. He's been king for well over 3 decades. And he helped the country transition to democracy after Franco and had a glorious reign. He's sort of reputed to have slept with vast numbers of people, something like sort of 1,500 or something like that. Presumably not all at the same time, although you never know with the Spanish. He has announced that he wants to abdicate in favour of his son, Philippe. It's complicated, by the way. Lots of Spanish people aren't really in favour of the monarchy. Rates of approval for the monarchy are very bad, which hasn't been helped, by the way, when austerity kicked off and the Great Recession of recent years kicked off. He was pictured in Botswana having just shot an elephant, standing next to his elephant, which didn't sort of display the kind of humility and austerity that was required. Although the great plus to that is that thereafter, when the Spanish elite decided to try and discuss austerity, the elephant in the room was at least, in fact, an elephant.
Perhaps he's just trying to have a really massive barbecue for all his lovers. That would kind of do it, an elephant, wouldn't it? I have to say that it's quite a family. His daughter, Princess Cristina of Spain, became the first member of the royal family to appear before a judge. She and his son-in-law are being investigated for corruption. And you suddenly think, oh, do you know, Philip's casual racism isn't so bad, is it?
I don't think our queen is... It's interesting because people sort of wonder whether the queen will one day abdicate so that Charles can become king. But what is completely obvious is that she is doing her damnedest to outlive Charles. Yeah. There's no way she's going to let that happen.
But also, I mean, she is remarkable. The king of Spain is 76, you know. Ours parachuted into a stadium at 80. I think she's...
It's apparently a very cheap monarchy, the Spanish monarchy.
Oh, is it? In what way?
It doesn't cost much money.
Just, oh, I see. Yeah. Just such about nasty clothing. And
yeah. it's something like £7 million a year it costs them, yeah, or billion.
But it's catching, isn't it, abdicating? Because Queen Beatrix in Holland abdicated, and so did Albert II in Belgium, and now King Juan Carlos. So I wonder if they've got, like, a support group. And they just... Because what do you do with your time if you've been a king?
Or even when you are a king.
Or even when you are. Well, you open business parks in sort of the provinces, I suppose, and just chill out and listen to Radio 4, I don't know.
I have to say my favourite aspect of this story was how the Daily Mail referred to Juan Carlos's wife, Queen Sophia, as a Felicity Kendall lookalike. The constitutional argument. Which British actress does his wife look like?
I mean, she's not actually a Felicity Kendall lookalike.
Professionally.
Yeah, with an agency.
The King of Spain, Juan Carlos, has announced his abdication after nearly 40 years on the throne, with his son, Crown Prince Philippe, succeeding him despite a last-ditch application from a C. Windsor of Buckingham Palace, who will at this point take any throne going. Juan Carlos has been widely regarded as one of the world's most well-respected kings, second only in popularity to Sir Mervyn and Berger. Take your time. 2 points to Hugo. Ellis, why is home where the photocopier is?
Because more people work from home now than ever before. So according to some new statistics, I think it's 4.2 million people, which is almost 14% of the workforce. But they've only been measuring it since 1998, but 4 million people. So that accounts for all of the viewing figures for Homes Under the Hammer. And I work from home, and I've seen them all 94 fantastic episodes.
But, you're a stand-up. How can you work from home? That's called unemployment.
Yeah, well... You know, I sit at home and I think about all of my humorous jokes and then I...
Make the audience come to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You could webcam it like those ladies who show men what's underneath their underwear. So you could do that with jokes.
Yeah.
I work from home quite a bit. Well, if you count gin as a job.
But it's because workplaces are miserable, I reckon, because we're talking about mostly clerical workers who work from home, and this is because people don't have proper offices anymore. People used to have offices and they'd have a plant and a picture of loved ones, and now they do open plans, you can't have a private conversation. The BBC has this hideous thing called hot desking. BBC Light Entertainment is the most mirthless place you've seen in your life. These entirely dispossessed people looking like they just got lost in IKEA and sat down because they were exhausted.
Say that we should take a lesson from Denmark. We lead the way in work-life balance. You're only allowed to work for 33 hours a week in Denmark. I mean, rest of the time we are required to investigate complex murder cases, but...
I think maybe maybe other people choose to work at home because office romances are simpler if it's just you.
That's true.
Hey, do you want to... Yep.
You can make your home feel more like an office by inviting round a load of people you barely tolerate. That's your...
And then
can I just say, do not have an office Christmas party at home because those all-in-one printer scanners, they are not designed to hold your weight. The quality was good, though. According to the... I feel I've said too much. According to the Office of National Statistics, the number of people working from home has risen to its highest level since records began. 4.2 million people in Britain now work from home. Must be a bloody big house. That's one in seven Britons. The figures include those who work from home and those who use their home as a base, but not those who work at home base. It also works the other way around, you know. I have been living here in the BBC Radio Theatre for years. Security think they've got mice, so... 2 points to Ellis. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Sarah have got 8 points, but Hugo and Ellis have gone into the lead with 9. We start round three with a cutting from the Uttoxeter Advertiser.
Thousands of dead trout fry, grayling, huge trout, stone loach and bullheads are lying all over the bed of the river. The Environment Agency are there now, and gutted is not the word.
Well, thanks to Michael Crisp for sending us that. Jeremy, why might our listeners have just about calmed down?
Why
it's to do
might...
with the time. It's to do with the time. Oh, it has just... to be Friday evening.
They just finished the period.
Yeah, there's a thing. 6:29 is the time of day you're most likely to have an argument.
6:21.
6:21.
Yeah.
Don't have an argument about it, guys.
No, sorry.
They said it was dinner table argument, which I think means that people are not as posh as they like to think they are, because 6:21, that's tea, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's when I was young, you had tea, was that sort of time. At 6-ish, you know, people have dinner, or supper. You go to someone's house for supper and you get there at 8 and you have to wait until 2 o'clock in the morning. Like supper. And, But when I was a kid, supper was Weetabix before you went to bed. It was, because my mum thought people couldn't live for more than 2 hours without eating. We used to be woken in the night and given biscuits. But yeah, 6:21, people thinking, I've only got 8 more minutes of news and then I have to listen to Radio 4's comedy output. And so they get all tense and jittery and they start lashing out at the people closest to them. Well, I don't know what... Yeah,
do you know
what
the biggest source... Anybody know what the biggest source of conflict is?
I think it's a split between Shia and Sunni Islam.
It's bad table manners. And I have to say, tell me about it. Honestly, kids hogging the port, not passing it on, I... drive me mad.
Who
my kids stealing my booster seat.
The study by and who were they studying?
Well, this was the curious, interesting thing. One of the causes of family arguments cited was running out of condiments. And then you learn that the survey was commissioned by Sarson's Vinegar. If it were by L'Oreal, for example, we'd probably discover the main cause of breakups was dull, lifeless hair.
Sharing mascaras without asking.
Exactly.
We're definitely not as posh as we think we are if Sarson's Vinegar is still considered a condiment.
Another example of bad manners is grooming at the table, and I do agree with that. That is what the internet is for. Can I just pass on, stop family arguments, I've got a great Danish trick for making broccoli taste delicious, okay, for the kids. What you do is you wrap the broccoli in bacon, you cook it, and then discard the broccoli.
It's like homeopathy.
Yeah. Research has shown that family arguments are most likely to happen around the dinner table at 6:21 p.m. Many of the arguments are caused by people constantly checking their watch at the dinner table to see if it's 6:21 yet. 24% of parents admitted they found it a constant battle to tear their children away from the television set. 12% of those parents admitted they regretted letting their child play with the super glue in the first place. 2 points to Jeremy. Sarah, have a listen to this.
Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up busy, busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cornflowers.
Sarah, why is spider venom creating a buzz?
I know about this because I saw the scary picture of the spider and then I read it because I thought it was going to be about spiders coming here. But it's not. So basically, they now think that they have invented a pesticide that isn't going to kill bees. Because what's been happening is pesticides kill all pests, but it doesn't have a way of knowing that bees aren't pests because they look a bit like pests and they behave like insects. But actually, they're needed because flowers can't have sex with each other. What they need is a bee. So it's like a three-way with a bee. And then so the bee gets them to both do it, and then it goes back to its hive and it does a waggle dance, which is basically sexual bragging about all the flowers it's done it with. But I think...
Just briefly there, it was like watching the Discovery Channel. And,
and so I think 90% of the plants on the planet need bees, but bees are in rapid decline and a lot of them are being... It's not just killed by pesticides, it also it can inhabit their brain and kill their intelligence, so they don't know which plants to go and pollinate. So what's so great about this new pesticide... And it basically, well, the equivalent is what's happened with pesticides. It's like, oh, I don't want anyone to burgle my house. So what I do, anyone who comes near my house, I hit them with a sledgehammer. And so my house didn't get burgled, but I also killed the milkman, the postman, all of my friends and family, the man delivering from Amazon, and the plumber. So my life's got a lot worse. So now I need to invent a new sledgehammer that knows when someone is a friend. And that's what this... So now the pesticide is made from spider venom and lectin from snowdrops. And this will kill lots of pests that we don't like because they don't help us. They are greedy.
The bit I didn't understand about this, right? One of the problems with the previous pesticides is that you said about the brain of the bee and so on, and they can't find their way back to the hive, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense to me because the worker bees are always female and they can just stop and ask the way. So...
But you know what's so great also about it is they are one of only two species that don't destruct, they only construct. And that's very interesting as well, in fact, that it's all women. They only make things, they don't destroy anything. Every other species destroys things.
And if a bee stings you, it dies immediately, which is why bees aren't violent. Wasps are horrible. But bees are our friends, if we're lonely.
Yeah, but if we run out of bees and that means there's no honey... Winnie the Pooh would have to sort of wean himself onto Nutella.
Well, if they were to die out, our only remaining source of honey would be lockets. A pesticide has been created which kills insects without harming honeybees. Scientists at the University of Newcastle combined venom from an Australian funnel spider with snowdrop plant protein. They said it was a pleasant surprise to create a biopesticide. We'd just been trying to make some homemade buckfast. A loss of bees would devastate world food production, as the threat of being stung has always made farmers move a lot faster. 2 points to Sarah. Alice, who wore the trousers in ancient times?
Ah, yes. Some researchers have found what they think is the world's oldest pair of trousers. And they know it's thousands of years old because of carbon dating. And they found a receipt for a gift-wrapped bottle of myrrh in one of the pockets. So... Yeah, it's, I think 3,000 years old, the trousers, yes. And they found them in China. But I don't know all the fuss is about, because I've got a pair of Umbro football shorts that I've owned since 1995, and four successive girlfriends have described them as gross.
But this is a huge finding, these old trousers. These are the missing link between hot pants and lederhosen. Well, I think they were riding breeches.
They were. The Daily Telegraph said the trousers were invented for horse riding by mobile pastoralists. Or, as the Daily Mail reported it, travelling people steal old trousers.
I think the Chinese have had them in a drawer for years, and with all the media focusing on the 25th anniversary of the massacre in Tiananmen Square, they thought, just something to throw them off the scent. Get those old pants out and give them to an archaeologist.
Or is one bloke going, don't chuck them out, because if I lose some weight, I can still fit into them.
The Chinese didn't just invent fireworks, but trousers as well. That'll explain flares. Thank you. A team of researchers have unearthed what they regard as being the oldest trousers in the world. The trousers are over 3,000 years old and are said to date back to Bruce Forsyth's first appearance on the Generation Game. They were made of two leg pieces and a crotch piece, which is also KFC's cheapest bargain bucket available. The trousers were made out of wool. Jeans weren't discovered until the 1950s by Watson and Crick. The 3,000-year-old trousers were thought to have been invented for horse riding. Also found on the dig were a hard hat, a wax jacket, and a girl in a headband called Jocasta. 2 points to Ellis. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Sandy, this was sent in by Roger Lovegrove from the access statement of the Forest Pines Hotel and Golf Resort in North Lincolnshire. Horizontal and vertical grab rails are positioned at the side of the toilet. In the event of an emergency, a member of the team will assist with your evacuation.
Any more for any more?
I've got one from Jonathan Hill. This is just a cutting from it was the Huffington Post, an article about Dutch prisons, but it was talking about British prisons. It was saying, a report in Britain last year, meanwhile, showed that close to a quarter of all prisoners in England and Wales were kept in overcrowded cells in the year to April. The Howard League for Penal Reform said figures showed about 19,140 inmates on average were made to share a cell designed for one person.
Boys?
I've got one. It's emailed in by Paul Basgaboga, and it's from the Guardian's website, and it's an offer, and it says, Guardian Masterclass, how to market your business on a zero budget. Price, £229.
This is from Ian in Suffolk, and it's a tweet from NHS Choices. Premature ejaculation's impact on women has been assessed by a new study, but our team point out some shortcomings.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Sarah have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Hugo and Ellis with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the BBC Dorset website, sent in by Ashley Price.
At the Dorset knob-throwing contest, the longest throw was by Dave Morrison, who tossed his knob 21.8 metres. There were also prizes for best painted knob, guess the weight of the knob, and the biggest knob.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the newscast were Jeremy Hardy, Sarah Pascoe, Hugo Rifkind and Ellis James. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by Menial Sleet. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, Jack Bernhardt and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson Crouch and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.